Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley and I'm super excited for this week's show because I'm joined once again by my beautiful wife, Erica Bromley. Hi, Erica.
Hi, babe.
Hi.
It's probably not a good thing that I'm already giggling, right?
It is a good thing. Okay. That's what people expect. You got to give the people what they want. So if you didn't bother to read the episode description, I'm calling this episode Scenes from a Marriage, but we're not talking about the Bergman movie, the five-hour sad Bergman movie that neither of us have seen. Nor are we really talking about the HBO miniseries because they've only aired two episodes. I guess we could talk about it a little bit because we've been watching it.
Sure, yeah.
I just thought it's a title that's in the public consciousness. The two of us happen to be married.
We are.
I thought it was a good title for an episode.
I like it.
But we are not talking about either of those two things. So I apologize if you turn this on thinking, finally, they're covering Bergman after 599 episodes.
Oh, no. Right.
No. I'm going to write that we're not in the episode description, but sometimes people just download the show and they don't necessarily read what it's about. They just look at the title.
We could cover him at some point.
Yes, for sure.
It's just not today.
I mean, we've already done 3,000 miles to Graceland. It only makes sense that we do the Seventh Seal.
Yeah.
what do you think of that show so far?
Oh my goodness, it's good. I really enjoy watching it. I'm completely captivated by their, I guess like their chemistry together and their performances. Although on the last episode, there's only been two so far.
Only two.
So the second one we were just watching was intense. Oh my gosh, that was really intense. They had a great way of sort of, you know, bringing the viewer in and making you really feel what they were feeling and feeling for them. But at one point you said that it almost felt a little bit like an acting exercise.
I did say that.
And I know what you mean.
Thank goodness.
Especially, yeah, right. Why else would I be here? I think sometimes any movie or show, when it's set in one room with only two people, that it ends up lending itself to that a little bit. Like, you can't help but think that. Or, I know, you're probably going to disagree with me, but
No.
Is it because, like, you used to do theater a lot, and so you
That doesn't count.
Well,
like, acting in high school doesn't count.
I know, but
they set it up a little bit that way because each episode has started with the actor, like, walking to their mark and sitting down and getting ready to perform the scene.
Right.
So they're setting it up almost like an acting exercise, which, you know, diminishes the content, which isn't what we're trying to do because it is good. Mm-hmm. And we've joked that the casting director is bugging our house, obviously, which is nice that they cast a show specifically for the two of us.
Right. We're talking about our love for the actors in the show.
Correct.
Oscar Isaac. Come over anytime. I mean, I just want to say hi. That's all I'm saying. I'll touch his hair, put my fingers in it, but it's fine.
No, he's got bad hair in Scenes from a Marriage,
yes,
I think.
It's not his best hair.
No.
But I know him, okay? And I know how his hair has been other times.
Sure. I understand.
And I just want to touch it.
I understand.
Please let me. Okay. And maybe like his face when he has stubble.
Yeah.
Or a beard.
Or a beard.
Yeah. Oh, you know I like beards.
Yeah, sure. That's
and
the only
Jessica
reason I have
Chastain.
One. Who also has a beard.
She's lovely, red. And we both like her, but like
sure.
You, yeah. So it's nice to have a show where we're looking at the leads and we're both very happy.
Again, they've only aired two so far, so who knows where it's going to go. And we haven't watched the Bergman one.
I
pulled it off of our shelf, hoping that we would get to it before it started. But
yeah.
We just didn't have time for a five-hour Swedish drama.
I can't believe we didn't have time for that, Patrick. What else could possibly be going on in our lives?
Well, it's almost like everything is going on in our lives at the same time.
It really is.
And we've been watching other stuff.
Sure. When we can. Yeah. Yeah.
So let me ask you, have you seen anything good lately?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So let me just quick note. I have seen some things for my job.
Yeah. Let's have it.
I'm sure I've talked about this a little bit before, maybe on the podcast. I don't know. I don't get to come on as often as I would like because of my job. But my students this semester really, really, really reacted to Citizen Kane. And I was so excited about that. And every semester that I have taught it, I tell them, like, just stick with it. Keep an open mind because many of the students today are sort of they have an allergy to black and white movies. Mm. they don't want to know that things existed before their birth year, you know, but those are huge generalizations because there are a lot of kids who that's not true at all. They're like so excited to learn more and they come in knowing things. And so that is so exciting for me. But that's the smaller group of kids. Most of them don't really know a lot about older movies and they just don't think that they're going to be good or relevant or connect to anything today. Right. And that's what they were writing about the themes and a lot of the students made connections to, we had also studied earlier this semester, The Social Network. And so they were making connections between those two stories, which we've definitely talked about in the past too. And they were talking about, a lot of them read The Great Gatsby last year when they were juniors in high school.
Well, that's good.
And they were making connections. And
it's
I was
nice
like,
nice when they can connect it to
yes,
other school
yes,
stuff.
Right. And they just were excited to do that. And it was just really neat reading these papers. Like, it had been a while.
It's been a while.
Wow. How many minutes in are we?
Not many.
Should I talk about what era this is
no.
for? Anyway, it was just really fun. They liked it so much by the end, and they really enjoyed and took a lot away just in terms of the cinematography and all the stuff that the film is talked about for, right?
The
reasons that anyone still talks about Citizen Kane, they really got it. And so that was just exciting. We also watched Singing in the Rain recently.
Nice.
And that is always one where they will write somewhere in something that they turn in. There will be a line from so many students. I have to be honest, I didn't think I was going to like this, but it was really good. Or I have to be honest, I'm sorry, Mrs. Bromley, I hate musicals, but I really liked this. Like, that's the common line for years. I hate musicals, but this was really great. And so I try to use that as the, you know, open door to, you don't have to love anything. You don't have to hate anything. Just keep an open mind to all of it, right? You don't have to, like, it's okay if you don't love musicals. I don't love musicals, like, as my leading characteristic, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not my thing, because they think if you love movies, and Mrs. Bromley loves movies, then they just assume that, of course, I love everything with, like, that same sort of equal, you know, I don't know. But, and I do like a lot of things, but you can just keep an open mind. Like, you don't have to state, this is something I talk about. Let's remove the school setting. Let's
all
remove
right.
students. Let's
it's
talk about
here.
Adults.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about adults. I just wish that sometimes we could remove that. I am this person. I only like these things. Like, it's okay because anyone can do whatever they want, but I personally, on my own personal level, just feel like life is so much more interesting and fuller for me because I'm just kind of open to it all, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, like to box myself in.
I think people are invested in creating recognizable identities online.
Ah.
And so it's, I am this person. I like these things.
Okay.
As opposed to, I'm a complicated person. I like a lot of different things, and which these people may be, but online they exist as, I like horror movies and horror movies only.
Right. And, you know, and again, that's totally fine, right? And especially because some people do find community that maybe they don't have in their like, in-person lives or whatever. But I guess I see it, and again, bring this back to what I just see it a lot in my students where it's like, this is the music I like, and this is the type of movie I like, or this is the video game I play, or these are the types. Like, they just, it's very, like, in one little box, and I just am always trying to encourage them to be open to, like, listen to other things and try other things and talk and share your passions, but be open to other people's as well. That's really it. Like, it's okay if you're, I don't know.
I think some of that is just who you've always been, though, because I think back to even when I was in high school, and I think there was a lot of, this is the stuff I like. Music was the big definer. Like, I listen to this music, therefore I dress this way, therefore I hang out with these people, therefore this is what we do on the weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, it all kind of branches out from, I listen to this kind of music. So I think it was true in high school, but you were somebody who never fell victim to that. And I don't know how much of it was in your high school even.
I'm sure.
I assume so. So it must just be like a teenage thing.
Sure.
And we're seeing a lot of people maybe either not outgrow it or choose to adopt some of that mentality as adults. Because, again, it's easier. It's people,
yeah, right.
People need to create a brand.
Right,
for online,
like some, right.
You know?
Yeah, and it's also fun, I'm sure, for people, right? And then again, to like meet others who have those interests and things like that.
Sure.
But yeah, I guess you're right, and I appreciate that you know that about me. You know, I guess it can be a detriment too, where sometimes I feel like people don't really know me or make assumptions because it hasn't always been obvious, right? Like you can't tell what I'm listening to or watching or whatever, right? Like even in high school, I remember, like, sometimes, you know how in high school sometimes you'd have to, you know, work in a group with other people maybe who weren't, you know, your core group of friends or whatever, just anything like that, right? Where you're talking to other people where they would be surprised by something that I liked or knew.
Yeah.
And to me, it was just like, huh, why would that surprise you? But I don't know. We're off on a tangent. But this always fascinates me because I think about like the newspaper. You know, I love a good newspaper, babe.
I'm aware.
I am maybe the youngest person still reading a newspaper on paper. I don't know. Am I alone out there? I'm alone. I'm so alone. Except for, yeah, thanks for... I'm not alone. You're right here.
yeah, but I don't read the newspaper.
You don't read the newspaper. I know. So. But you always get it from me.
I do.
When I was a kid, though, and I would grab our family's newspaper, you flip through it and you're sort of forced to see headlines that you would, like, I would never look for those things. You don't even know what to look for, like, now on the internet. So when my students are searching for things that interest them, like, there's very little chance of, like, accidentally coming across, something that might pique their interest. But like when I read the newspaper, there would be headlines that I would have never looked for on my own, but the headline caught me or whatever, a graphic, who knows, something caught my eye. And now I'm reading about it and I'm learning more. And I feel like that was I think that probably is a big part of who I am, that I was exposed to the newspaper. No, I don't know.
Well, and we've talked about this plenty of times, so this is nothing new.
Boring.
But we talk
about my glasses.
The curating of one's own experience, and everything now is curated to exactly what you want to experience. So taking it away from the news realm and going back to movies, we saw stuff because there were five channels, and or if you had cable, you know, then there were 25 channels, and stuff was on, and so that's how you saw stuff. Now there's 15 different streaming services and you can go to each one of those and you select what you want to watch, or you go to Spotify and you say, play this playlist for me, and it's going to, rather than expose you to new music on the radio. This weekend, here's something great that we saw recently.
Yay.
Guns N' Roses Live.
Yes.
We went to Milwaukee and saw GNR play 3 hours.
It was super fun.
It was super fun, and they were really good, and they sounded really good, and they were fun, and they were in a good mood.
And Slash. Oh my God.
And Slash.
Can we talk about Slash later?
If you
Slash
want.
Cast. Slash cast? Slash cast?
Well, there's a Slash film cast.
No, I just Slash.
Just Slash cast.
Rock and roll, baby.
Got
what
it.
What are we talking about?
I'm into the rock and roll.
Oh my God. Is Slash listening?
Yes, he is a listener.
I have so many things.
He has been a listener for many years.
That I want to say to him, that when I was like 10 and listening to GNR hardcore, I wasn't having those same feelings about Slash.
Oh, interesting.
In fact, I think I was more of an Axl girl back then.
Okay.
I don't know. I have thoughts. Anyway, back to what you were saying. We saw Guns N' Roses Slash cast.
Opening for Guns N' Roses was Mammoth WVH, which stands for Wolfgang Van Halen.
Yay.
I always want to say Von Halen because Wolfgang Von makes more sense to me. But Wolfgang Van Halen. Von Halen. Do you listen to Van Halen?
Oh, my God. Fancy. I love, by the way, side note, that when we were texting my mom from the concert and she was like, oh, Valerie Bertinelli's son.
That's correct.
Cute.
I probably wouldn't have ever listened to that band. And even when we saw that that's who was opening, we were like a little bit like, oh, that's a bummer, because it was supposed to be David Lee Roth at one point.
Right. Not that that's a bummer, but again, it was supposed to be somebody else.
And it was like, oh, it's this band that I don't really care about.
Okay. Like, we didn't really know much.
And then we ended up really liking them.
Yes.
And I wouldn't have necessarily given them a chance, but the fact that I was sort of forced to be exposed to something that I wouldn't have exposed myself to on my own opened me up to something new that I liked and that I will continue to listen to.
Yes.
I wouldn't have had that experience otherwise. So there is value in exposing yourself or being exposed. I knew what I was saying as I was saying it, but I still went with it.
There is value. I'm going to look into that. Okay.
in being exposed to new things. I think I would have said the exact same thing when I saw Singing in the Rain for the first time in high school, because I don't generally care for musicals.
Yeah.
And especially at that age, I hadn't necessarily seen a ton of older movies from the 1950s. I wasn't a fan of musicals. I didn't really know Gene Kelly.
Yeah.
And yet I was like, well, that was one of the best movies I've ever seen ever.
Right.
And I still think that, and I still don't really like musicals. That's the thing. Just because you like Singing in the Rain doesn't mean like, so I guess I have to like musicals now?
Right. And I think that's what I was trying to get to, but couldn't. Exactly. Just like be open-minded to it and just love what you love, but it doesn't have to.
You don't have to now define yourself by it as the musical lover.
Right.
You can love Singing in the Rain and five other musicals and not really care about the rest of
That's
them.
That's me. I like so many of them, but it's still not like my leading
thing.
You
don't define yourself as musical lover?
No. And whatever. I don't know. Yeah. No, that's exactly right, the way you said it. And going back to Wolfgang Van Halen for a second.
Yeah, Van Halen.
No, stop. I'm start saying that by accident. He was so good, and he seemed so, I said this on, I think, Twitter, like in response to you or someone, or I don't know.
It wasn't me, but I know what you're talking about.
No, who was I talking to?
We were talking to somebody who had seen the Guns N' Roses show at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
And we were going back and forth.
Oh, yeah, right. It wasn't someone we knew.
Three T's of Fury.
Oh, no. Yes, it is. Yes, that's him. Yes, yes, we do. So, well, we know him just from, you know, F This Movie and Twitter and stuff. But yes. Hi. And he was so Wolfgang seemed so genuinely happy to be there. Just nice. Like, sometimes you could just hear something in someone's voice or I don't know. He just seemed so, the way he looked out at the audience, it was just different. I don't know. He seemed, and honestly, Guns N' Roses, like, I thought Axl Rose seemed so genuinely happy to be there and performing. He was smiling at people. Like, really, it seemed like, I mean, we were not that close to be able to tell this, but like the screens were great. It looked like he was really like making eye contact with people and smiling at people. And then he just, sometimes he'd like do something and kind of laugh and look, I don't know. He just looked so happy. And that was fun. Great to see, you know? But yeah, it was all good. I'm glad we saw that opening band too.
So Mammoth at the end of their set bowed, like the band all came together and they all took a bow together.
It was so cute. Yeah.
And I was like, that's really cute. That's so genuine. And that's so nice. And I was very moved by that.
Holding hands. It was cute.
And then at the end of Guns N' Roses, they did the same thing. And I was even more moved by that. Cause I was like, these were guys who hated each other and were miserable.
Yes.
And but now they're like together bowing on stage.
Okay. I had the same feeling. I was thinking about their careers and how they started when they were.
We haven't talked about this, guys, because we don't talk to each other unless we're podcasting.
Scenes from a Marriage. We had this conversation yesterday. Now we are recording it. they've been through so much. They were so young when they started. We did talk about this actually.
We didn't talk about the bowing or any of that stuff, but we did talk about
Just how young they were when they started. Yes, and like what they went through in the years of not talking and drugs and anger and fighting and just all this stuff and leaving the band, coming back, all that, other bands, right? But they just seemed so like happy to be there, and that made me happy.
Yeah.
That like just that we as a human species can like get through shit and like just accept that like, okay, you know, mistakes were made or we were young or that was dumb, but like now let's not do that. You know, like just they're back together and they're making and they're playing their music and it's incredible and it's so special. And to think about how many people want to be on that level, right? Like, oh, I want to be a professional musician, like make my career, my life out of it or whatever in the arts, right? And so special and so such a small number of people who can actually do it. So to think of them like basically forgiving each other and saying that all was hard and sucked, but like it's in the past now and let's move forward.
Yeah.
And have this great tour and just, I don't know. Yeah. It was really nice.
Yeah.
Cute.
Yeah.
Sometimes Axl would bow after a song.
He bowed after every song.
It was so cute.
Every single song he did a little bow.
I know. sweet.
It was really funny. It made me laugh every
Axel,
time.
Call me. Slash, call me Duff. Oh my gosh, Duff. Like, I have to admit, like, I feel bad because I'm such an Axel slash girl.
Yeah.
I was really digging Duff.
I knew you would.
You did?
Yeah, as soon as he came out. Duff was always my favorite.
Okay.
But as soon as he came out, he just had a look that I was like, oh, this is going to work for her.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Like his hair.
Yeah, and no, I know.
Yeah, and he was wearing like a shirt that reflected the interests of Milwaukee, which even though, I went to college in Milwaukee and I love Milwaukee. I student taught in Milwaukee. And so we love Milwaukee since then. Obviously, we go like every few years. But he wore the shirt for Milwaukee and I was like, oh, and then his like, yeah. And I read online he's been married for like 100 years.
Not true.
Not really, but like
21 or 22. Yeah.
A few years more this time. Yeah. Well, I mean, his first marriage is
this isn't Scenes from Duff's Marriage.
I want it to be Scenes from Duff's Marriage. He was married so young. Like, yeah. I mean, they were famous, all rock stars, right? Don't they have like their first marriage when they're like
usually
on their first tour?
Right. Yeah. Right.
No,
exactly.
Just kidding. So what have we watched lately, babe?
Well, I'll tell you.
We watched Lula Rich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Miniseries.
Yeah.
Not totally a movie.
I call it a documentary, but it was a documentary. Four parts.
Yeah. What'd you think of it?
I thought it was fascinating. Okay. I am someone who will put it right out there. Like, I love documentaries. I do think, like, that's one of my leading, like,
yes.
You know.
Yeah. For sure.
So I love documentaries. I am always fascinated about the multi-level marketing stuff. I've heard from a few people, like people I've known and then other just random like voices that'll pop up on the internet or whatever, where some people said, wow, I had no idea it was like that. Or, wow, I had no idea that the companies worked that way. Or, wow, I had no idea, fill in the blank.
Right.
And I certainly had no idea about a lot of what went on at LuLaRoe. But I did know, I mean, I knew people who sold it. I knew people who wore it. And it was like, there was some cute stuff, right? Like, there's no shame or judgment or anything
that.
But what was not new information for me was knowing how these companies work in terms of the multi-level marketing and the signing up your friends to sell.
Well, and you've been invited to, like, parties before,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, right. I mean, I'm sure. I guess, I take that back. I'm not sure. I assumed that everyone had been. I mean, like multiple brands.
If you're a woman with
brands.
A Facebook account,
oh my
I feel
gosh.
Like you get invited to these things.
Yeah,
but not necessarily.
Just,
who knows?
Yeah, right. Well,
but as soon as you get invited to one of these parties, you know that it's a multi-level marketing
Well,
scheme.
To be fair, I remember being at a party that was like, you know, your sister's friend and I did it to be nice to your
like
sister.
Like a purse thing?
I don't know, or candles or something, okay. Whatever. And that was, there was no like,
it wasn't like
sign up to sell.
Okay.
Although, no, I think that was a part of it, but it was like, maybe like sign up, have a party. Then I don't know. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. I think like we were like dating. So I was like, sure, it's Patrick's sister. I'll go.
Scenes from a dating.
Scenes from like when you ate like five plates of pasta to impress my grandmother.
That's right.
You were like, I usually
And now
eat
I'm diabetic.
Nothing. I know. Oh my gosh.
Think she's impressed.
But you're married to me.
I am. Mm. It worked out.
So I guess I've just always known how these multi-level marketing companies work. And so I was a little bit surprised to read so many, again, people online that maybe they're way younger than me. I have no idea. Kind of being surprised by how they work. I was definitely surprised by this couple who started this company with their entire gigantic family. And then there are so many details that your mind is just like, what? Wait, did I hear that correctly?
Those two family members married each other?
Oh, okay. That's fine. Okay. And that's just like a throwaway. That's like the first minute practically. So I guess we didn't really spoil anything there, right?
No, I don't think
so. It's like literally the opening conversation. But it's just, to me, even if you know how multi-level marketing companies work, even if you like them, maybe you're a part of one, whatever, I don't know. I still think the documentary series is super fascinating to watch for the personalities and for learning about what these real people with families, like what they went through. Like, yes.
Yeah.
They, at one point, were making so much money that it was like unheard of and they didn't know what to do with it. And now most of those people have nothing. So. And that seems to be the trend with these things. I don't know. Anyway, but it was a good show to watch. It was interesting.
That's on Amazon Prime. It's called Lula Rich.
Okay, yep.
We watched The Voyeurs.
Yes. We did.
What'd you think of The Voyeurs?
So we watched that like right after we watched Malignant. And I noticed that there was so much talk online of like Malignant is a giallo. And right? I just couldn't help but keep making this joke about voyeurs being a giallo because
at one point somebody wears leather gloves.
Yeah, and that's like always the, yeah.
Right.
But actually there were some other things too.
Not really.
I think I'm going to write an essay about it.
Please do.
This is my thesis.
I have somewhere you can publish it.
In this essay, I will.
Slash film.
Slash cast. Is Slash listening again? Like his
yes,
hair.
He listens.
His hands, like he, oh my God. He
calm down.
When he plays his guitar solos and they go close up on the videos and you just see his fingers moving so fast and like his rings and his muscles and his everything and then the shirt. Okay, wait, what were we talking about?
This is like that song Great Expectations by Kiss.
You.
Where he talks about, you see me on the stage, you know what I can do.
Oh my gosh.
You wish you were the one I was doing it to.
Oh my gosh. Is that Gene Simmons singing?
Of course it is.
Yeah, of course it is.
Of course
oh,
it is.
Oh my God. Slash cast.
Slash cast.
Okay.
Great Expectations.
Yeah, how's Gene Simmons doing? I hope he's doing well.
I think he's recovered.
How's Paul Stanley?
They've both recovered,
he better
I think.
Be able to fly across the arena yeah, next no, time. Man. We were supposed to see them also in Milwaukee, and yeah. it got canceled because yeah. of
they
COVID.
They both had COVID.
They both had COVID, yeah.
But I think they're recovered and back on tour, so.
Okay. So the Voyeurs.
The Voyeurs, yeah. What'd you think of it? I, the little bit I read, it was like, well, it's bringing back sort of the erotic thriller, you
yeah.
know? And I guess there's
sure.
like some sex in it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would qualify it as an erotic thriller. I did appreciate there's a certain point where it's like, I don't think it's spoiling anything to say that it twists about four or five times.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. I almost wish there was another 20 minutes so that it could have done it four more
yeah.
times just to go completely bananas. Because I wouldn't say like any of it was super satisfying, but I mean, I liked the movie enough.
Yeah, I did too. I enjoyed watching it. I was interested in like where it was going to go. And there were parts that were not funny, like a comedy, but just they had me kind of going, oh, well, what's this going to be? Like, what,
right.
where is this going? You know,
right.
and that was kind of fun to watch. And
yeah.
yeah. There were, again, this is so picky, right? And it's just me and maybe someone else loved it. But there were a few choices closer to the end that I didn't totally agree with or get. You know, I was kind of like, oh, I wish that would have gone another way. Or I don't see how this would have gone this way. But then it does not matter at all because those are nitpicking and it is what it is. And it's
yeah.
still it was still enjoyable to watch. Yeah, I didn't hear a lot. Have people been talking about it?
No. I
okay.
mean, it came out the same weekend, I think, as Malignant, and
okay.
at least our Twitter feeds,
right.
based on who we follow and interact
okay,
with.
Okay, sure, yeah.
It was only Malignant.
Right, okay.
So I just happened to hear one or two things about The Voyeurs to even know that it
yeah,
existed.
Yeah, how did you know it existed?
I think Nick Allen wrote something about
oh,
it.
Oh, okay. Hi, Nick Allen.
He's not listening.
I know.
Slash is.
Slash?
Yeah.
Oh,
so it was on my radar. I don't think I even knew that Sydney Sweeney from Euphoria
yeah.
and White Lotus was in it
right.
until we pressed play on
okay.
it. But yeah, I'd recommend it enough.
Yeah, me
like
too.
I said, it's on Amazon Prime.
Right.
The only other movie that I'll talk about is one that you didn't totally watch because you had a huge deadline for
oh.
teaching this weekend
yes.
that you had to accomplish. So you weren't able,
and
yeah.
things like that. Yep.
So you weren't able to pay as close attention. But that's the new Clint Eastwood movie, Cry Macho.
Right.
And I don't even know totally what to say about Cry Macho. Like, you know that I've been running some of Clint Eastwood's filmography
mm-hmm.
lately, revisiting some movies, trying to fill in some of the blanks. Cry Macho, in some ways, I hope is his last movie
mm-hmm.
because I think it is a nice little coda. It's
okay.
like a nice little movie.
Okay.
It's not super well made or written. That's my problem with it.
Okay.
At its heart, it means well.
Okay.
And it's great to see Clint Eastwood at 90 years old still acting and giving sort of a gentle performance. I wish he didn't have to make himself the object of affection for like a 50-year-old woman.
Yeah.
He's 90. Like,
yeah.
And she's not looking at him like, what a cute old man. She's right. looking at him like, I could fuck this guy.
Right, right.
Stop it, Clint Eastwood.
Right, yeah.
Stop it. Just stop it. You know, you don't have to still be sexy at 90. It's okay.
Right.
You've done enough of that in your career. I liked it because, again, of what it is trying to say about his legacy and about a different idea of masculinity than most of his films have put forward.
Okay.
But again, it's like not a great movie.
There was a scene, you know, I was kind of watching, then I was working, and then I was mostly working.
Right.
But there was a scene, and I don't even remember what happened or what I heard, but I turned to you and I said, if I was really watching this,
oh, I know what it was.
I would be crying right now, or I would be sobbing by the
he
end
was
or
talking
something
about
like
being
that,
a
right?
bad dad, which is all he's ever played in movies.
Oh.
He's never I'm trying to think of a movie where Clint Eastwood is a good father, because almost every one of his movies, and I was talking about this with Adam and Rob, and they were like, I wonder if he's trying to like work something out like about his own kids.
Yeah.
And it's like,
maybe.
But I mean, I know like Allison Eastwood is an actor,
yeah.
and she's been in movies with him, and Francesca Eastwood is now an actor, and she's, I don't know if she's acted opposite him the way Allison Eastwood has.
Okay.
I don't know.
They used to have like a reality show or something.
The Eastwoods? Maybe. Wasn't it something on E?
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Is he still married?
I don't know.
Well, this is where we are not going to know the answers to any of the questions I am asking.
Okay. I mean, I know he was married to Frances Fisher, because that's who Francesca Eastwood's mom is.
Okay.
Are they still married?
No,
I have no idea.
I thought there was someone else.
Probably. My guess is he's married to someone.
Okay. I thought it was like a model or an actress. And I thought that
and
they...
And she had the show.
And I think, yeah,
and he
maybe
was just like...
In the background?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. This is a very fuzzy memory.
Oh, he was never married to Frances Fisher. I'm sorry. Dina Ruiz?
Yeah, Dina.
They divorced in
2014. Okay. But when was their show?
Mrs. Eastwood and Company on the E! Network.
Oh, wow.
God,
see?
This is like
there
such a barely
yeah.
formed memory that this existed. And if you hadn't brought it up, I would have
right.
lived the rest of my life without remembering right. that there was a Clint Eastwood right. reality show on E!
I love when this stuff happens, though.
I do.
When our memories just get shaken out like that.
That was on in 2012 for one season.
Wow. And then they divorced in 2014?
Yeah.
So don't do a reality show, I guess?
I suppose that's the
no,
lesson.
It's worked for other people, I think. I don't know. So he was never married to Frances Fisher?
No, they were partners, but not married.
Okay.
But they had a daughter.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So that was the scene then, because I know I
yes,
heard something, I saw
about,
something.
You have a thing with old
felt,
men already.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So Clint Eastwood being 90 and talking about regret would have destroyed you.
Oh my God. So when Patrick says I have a thing with old men, it doesn't mean like...
Her thing was Slash.
Slash is not too old for me. I just want to touch his hand.
I understand.
Okay. Oscar Isaac's hair... And face.
And Slash's hand.
And butt. And Slash's hand.
And butt.
And butt. And chest. Probably his chest. Because, I mean, it was already, like, his shirt was open. So it's
right.
I'm not
right.
asking for anything I haven't already seen.
Right.
It's fine. Okay. So what were we talking about?
No.
I don't have a thing for old men.
That is not what I meant.
That
I'm
is,
sorry.
No, you
that's
didn't say for.
Off.
You didn't
okay.
use that word. But I just wanted to clarify. Right. It's not really, that's not really my thing. I like to stay in the general, you know, age range.
Yeah.
You're in my age range.
Thank you.
You know, you're older than me, though.
Take it easy.
But no, I don't have anything for old men, but old men who, like, if I see a man sitting alone on a bench.
No, forget it.
It's like the day is over and I'm like talking to Patrick about how we can help him. Should we go? Should we find out? Like, should we bring him to our car? What should we do? And he's like, Erica, this has happened multiple times. And you say, he might just be waiting to like...
Yeah.
Go see his wife and like they're going to go to a movie and everything's great and happy.
He
but
could be
I'm
a racist asshole.
Oh my God. You've also said that to me too. Right. okay, that's true. I have to remember that. But sometimes he's just like sad and alone and he misses his family or something happened or he regrets being like a horrible husband 20 years ago and he's divorced now and he's never found love again. And or he's just alone and I feel, yeah, men, old men. Okay, so yeah, remember the Irishman?
I remember the
Irishman. Oh, jeez.
I remember the Irishman.
Is there any connection between the Irishman and in this movie?
Cry Macho?
Cry Macho?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not really.
Just, I'm thinking about old men and crying. And
yeah,
me,
no.
Me crying. Old men being sad and me
crying.
Cry Macho
is a much, like...
That's the connection. Old man sad.
Yeah.
Erica cries.
Got it.
Okay.
Cry Macho is a much more upbeat movie, even though it's like... Okay. Kind of sad, and it's about looking back, and it's about being 90. And,
okay. Oh, yeah, I can't do that. I can't do sad being 90 and sad man, old man, and regret of parenting.
Yeah.
Shoot. So you are protecting me from this.
I am.
Yes.
Let's talk about what we came here to talk about.
What was that?
Well, I had this idea the other day about asking you who your favorite directors were.
And I had an idea about asking you about... 599 episodes of
sure.
F This Movie.
Yes, we can talk about that if you'd like. I'd rather talk about your favorite directors.
Okay.
Because I don't know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that I don't know your favorite directors bothers me.
Okay. So you definitely
But I kind of do also
so.
Know them.
Right. So my list is, first of all, it's ever-changing. And then part of that's just my personality and the problem I have. Like right now in my drafts on Twitter, I have something saved because it was like, choose four. And I had like 15. And I was like, maybe I should do it right this time. I'm just going to get it down to four, you guys. And now it's like 5 days after the thing has passed. And it's like, well, I'm not going to tweet that out, right? Like, who cares? Maybe I'll do it tonight just for you, one listener. but... That's just my personality, right? So when you ask me favorite directors or if you tell me top five, like I'm immediately like, well, I know my one and two. And then after that, it's a lot of people and how dare you make me choose? And then I like seriously think about it and get upset. Like, why should I have to choose?
Whoa,
no
wow.
one's making
Don't
me choose.
Get upset.
Oh, no, not at you, babe. No,
oh,
no.
Well, thank
but
you.
Just in general, at the world, like, why should I have to choose? I can like as much as I want.
Of course you can.
Yes.
Nobody's saying.
No, right. No, somebody's
I have
saying.
More than five favorite directors, but I could probably list a top five.
Someone one day might make me pick only five, like life
right.
or death, and then what? And then what?
Isn't the implication still that you like more than five? Like
I always do. Yeah, that's true. I just really struggle with. I mean, I know people think it's like I'm being funny or cute, or no one thinks I'm being funny or cute. But
I do.
Oh, thanks, babe. But I really, when people ask, like, "What's your favorite?" It's like I really struggle to answer that question, like on a deep level, because I don't know. I just love too much.
You do. Mm-hmm. You just love too much. So who are the two that you know for sure?
Who do you think?
I know who they are. I was just setting you up so
oh,
that
I'm
you could answer.
I'm setting you up to guess and prove your amazing knowledge of your wife.
Okay, so it's Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
And Spike Lee.
Yes.
Okay.
So here's the thing. I want to try to articulate this because I'm going to name a lot of directors right now. And they're pretty much like everybody's favorites. Not really. I mean, someone will hear me say that and be like, no way. That's a hack. I hate him. Or he said something mean once or whatever. You know, like
well,
there. I get it. Like,
yeah.
I know that that's not the case. But I
Your
don't.
Number one is Brett Ratner.
I.
I'm just trying to think of people who have been canceled.
Oh, my God. I can't think of anyone funny either, but I was going to make a joke about...
I mean, I can think of people who have been canceled, but
sure.
for much more serious things,
no,
and
right,
I
right.
don't want to make
then, like,
light
joking.
Of that.
Right. Yeah.
Not that what Brett Ratner did wasn't serious. Do you see how
no, it is
you
serious.
Just immediately
right.
like,
you
just
can't...
back myself into a corner?
Right. You can't... Just don't talk. That's shh.
All right.
Slash. Let's talk about Slash again. And his hands were so fast when he plays those guitar solos. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. When you talk about those directors,
yes.
right? When I think of them, they have been the two that have been like with me since the first time I saw one of their movies as a kid, even if the movie, and I'm just like, I'm not even remembering specifically right now. Like, I don't remember what my first Spike Lee movie was.
Mm.
It probably was not a movie that like is still on my list. Or let's say this, it's not a movie that like would be on a list for like one of the best films ever made, right?
Sure.
But those two filmmakers have always... please forgive me if this sounds douchey. I don't know. Like, they've always their films, no matter what they're about, usually, of course, there's exceptions to every rule. So let's just get that out of there right away. But their movies are like taking something inside of me that I cannot articulate.
Right.
And they're putting it out there on the screen. So something is on the screen that is a me.
Right.
And I don't know how to explain it. And also, most people, even like people who are very close to me in my life, family members, I think most people would not be able to understand this about me.
I do.
Like, I know. I know. Thank you. I love you for that and other reasons. But that you do kind of, and that's, I think, why we, you know, 20-something years ago even started talking and then couldn't shut up with each other. Because, like, we just kind of understood.
Yes.
We did a lot of like not finishing sentences, but not in that corny way. I mean, it probably was super corny, but just because we really knew what the other one was like thinking or feeling or going to say or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's been a great, anyway.
Time saver.
Yes. It's
really a time saver.
And we are busy in our lives right now.
So it's nice that we don't have to complete sentences and the other person will just understand.
Right.
We save a lot of time that way, which gives us more time to watch The Voyeurs.
Oh, yes. But just like any art, right? Art speaks to people in different ways. And so there are many, like, I am not alone in saying that those two people are my favorite directors. I'm not unique or original in any way. But I do think that some of my my emotional responses to their work and to them as human beings, like we watched the Spike Lee New York City
Epicenters
9/11 to
21 and a half.
Yes.
It's a long title.
I don't remember the title.
Hard to keep straight.
The Spike Lee documentary that was about 9/11 and COVID. Okay. Right. New York City. Brooklyn.
HBO.
Duh, Bronx. Duh. That documentary, like, I don't know how to explain it. It sounds so stupid. I loved it so much because I was either crying at the sadness or marveling over everything Spike Lee says and how he interviews someone and how he goes from talking about something devastating to then making them feel a certain way in the interview and what they're sharing. And then he's laughing with them. And it's like his words are like a hug. And like, but he's so funny. And then the way he labels everything. And this is just Spike Lee. And if you know Spike Lee, you get it. I suggested that documentary to many people. And then I stopped because I'm like, you know what? They're not going to get, if they don't know Spike Lee, they're not going to get why it to me is different than just your traditional documentary or your traditional look at 9/11. Or I don't know, like something that they do speaks to me. Obviously, you know, I think I've said on the show before, I grew up in an Italian, pretty Italian family.
Yeah.
And anything Italian in the media, right, was always like fun and we liked it. And my family was not a family that was like offended by
the Sopranos.
You know, right. Mafia stuff or whatever.
Right,
like,
right.
We thought it was fun and great and not the murdering, but you know what I mean. I mean, when I was a kid, I was very aware that like The Godfather was an important movie and an important book and everyone in my family had read it. Right. And so the first time I watched Goodfellas, it like changed me. But it wasn't just because they were Italian, although that helped. Right. And it wasn't
they were Irish
just
too.
Okay, let's talk about the Italians. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That's true. But, you know, if you want to be made. No, I'm just kidding. the first time, it wasn't just because there were, you know, oh, I connect to these little things. Or, oh, look at them, the way that they talk around a table or they go to the Italian Sunday family dinner. And these things that I recognize. Yeah, that helps. That definitely helps. Of course, that's part of what I'm responding to for sure. But it's also the way that he's telling the story. And if Mike is listening, the way he uses the music. Okay, we'll talk about that on a separate episode.
I'm sure we've told that story. I'm sure we have.
Are you
sure?
We've
been doing this for 599
episodes.
What
episode do you think we share the story of? When you say that story, you're talking about me making you write into the Daily Herald about movies.
Newspaper. We're back to newspapers.
Yes. Dan Kyer, our local critic, who we... both like grew up reading along with Roger Ebert and we've talked about all that stuff, right?
I think so.
Okay.
It's hard to remember. We've been doing it for a long time.
I know.
11 years.
This is the 599th episode.
It sure is.
So again, I'm not doing a very good job of explaining because it's just unexplainable. Like some art touches you or reaches you or affects you in a different way. You respond to it. You hear a song on the radio. And for some people, like there's that one song, outro that like I could listen to and I could just, I would cry and I'd be happy at the same time hearing it. And someone else will hear that song and feel nothing at all, right? So this is just, this is what it is. This is what art does. And for whatever reason, part of it is being Italian. Part of it, they're both New Yorkers. And I, you know, I have a love affair with New York City. We just...
Do you love New York? Do you love them because you love New York, or do you love New York because you grew up watching their movies?
I think both, but probably, I mean, I guess, I don't know, my love of New York, definitely from movies, for sure, but not just theirs. I mean, because it's everything. It's like the dirty, seedy New York and the flashy Broadway New York and the neighborhoods of New York, and it's everything, you know, but...
Mostly Sex and the City.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I just, their shoes and their outfits.
Because the city,
oh my
it was like another, New York was like another character.
Right. Babe, like their fashion was like another character.
Willie Garson died. I just saw that before we started recording from Sex and the City.
Hmm.
What was his name?
Someone else just died too.
From Sex and the City or just in
general?
No,
sorry, just in general.
Oh,
someone
else.
No, a comedian?
Yes, I know. I saw who you're talking about. I don't remember his name, but.
Anthony something?
Sounds right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
New York City, Martin Scorsese, Spike Lee. When I was a kid, Spike Lee did all the stuff with like Michael Jordan.
It's got to be the shoes.
Oh my gosh. See, this is the thing. So, I mean, clearly it's just my life, what I liked, but the way that it affects me, and I know that people listening, if they still are, like understand this about when art, like it, the way that Spike Lee gets inside me, the way that Martin Scorsese gets inside me, I mean, like part of, have I ever cried on the podcast before? I might start crying right now.
I don't know if you have.
This is embarrassing. Part of why I think I responded so much. Oh my God. What is
this
happening?
This might be a first.
What is happening? Part of why I responded so much to The End of the Irishman is because I love those actors so much, and I love Martin Scorsese, and I love their partnership and what they've done in their life, and it has made me a different and better person and a better movie watcher and a better movie lover. And so when – oh, I can't even talk about the last scene because spoiler.
Don't talk about the last scene. Yeah,
okay. Well, 'cause you don't want me to cry more.
Yeah. Was that not clear?
Okay, yeah, I can't talk about the last scene.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil it either for people, but The Irishman...
It's a guy sitting in a chair in a room.
Yeah, but he says something.
Okay.
And then there's that shot.
Yeah, I know the shot.
Do you remember when we saw that movie?
Yes,
and I
remember.
I was like sobbing, sobbing. I mean, I know a lot of people. I think a lot of people cry. I don't know. I was sobbing. We went in the lobby. I was sobbing. We're in the bathroom. I'm still crying.
It was like a sobby lobby.
We're in the car. Why? See, this is Scenes from a Marriage because we make jokes like that all the time. And then every single time we make those jokes, we laugh so hard. And they're probably not funny to literally anyone else in the entire world.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, my God. But you're okay. So anyway, I love Martin Scorsese and Spike Lee.
I know.
The first time I listened to the album The Suburbs by Arcade Fire, I felt like they had written songs that took all of my, this is going to sound so weird, I felt like they took my insides and took my brain and took my past and took my present and took everything I'd ever felt or thought and took it all and put it into not just the words of the songs, because not like the words, I mean, some of them, yes, I was like, oh my gosh, this really is affecting me, but some of it's just like how they sound. And I don't know how to talk about that. I'm not a professional musician. I've never written music, but like the way that they sound and then sometimes what they were about. And sometimes both of those things. And it felt like they made that album just for me. Now, I know they didn't because I am not so egotistical to think that anyone has done anything for me. But like, you did something for me today. You gave me your sweatshirt when I was freezing cold outside. Thank you. But I don't think...
I'm just like Arcade Fire.
I knew it. That's why I keep you around.
Easy.
Sorry. I'm getting excited.
Yeah.
And crying and laughing. And so I'm hitting the table. Yeah, I just felt like this is art that really speaks to me. It understands something about me. They've never met me. They don't know who I am. I'm just some random person in the Chicago suburbs. But like, they get the suburbs.
Mm.
And as far away, like as far from Martin Scorsese and Spike Lee's many of their movies may seem, there's still things in them that, I don't know, they just understood something about me, what I liked, what I cared about, what I had empathy for. In life, even if it wasn't me personally that experienced something, right?
Sure.
But the things that I cared about or had empathy for, they understood. That was a lot of talking. But then you could talk about directors like Quentin Tarantino. I've loved all of his films. So is he a favorite director? I guess, right? But I don't talk about him in the same way that right. I talk about the other two. Paul Thomas Anderson, I did used to talk about like that. I think I used to include him a lot.
This is where I want to go.
Okay.
Because this is the phenomenon that I want to understand, because I have a few names that I want to throw out.
Oh, yeah.
If I was going to come up with...
Oh, for me?
3 through 5, yeah.
Okay.
But they all run into the Paul Thomas Anderson conundrum.
Okay.
Because, like you, at one point I would have said Paul Thomas Anderson was probably my favorite working director. Mm-hmm. But that's essentially based on 2, maybe 3 movies, because right. this was, you know, probably before There Will Be Blood. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even love There Will Be Blood the first mm-hmm. time I saw it, but I was very sick when we saw that movie.
I remember that.
Very, very sick. Now I like it way, 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 way more. But do you include him on the list because Boogie Nights is the thing that you're talking about?
It is. That movie affected me the same.
Specifically Boogie Nights.
Yes, yes. And Magnolia too. But Boogie Nights was like, right. I left the theater and felt like something had changed in me.
Yeah.
Right. And it was very much, and I used to, at the time, you know, I was so young, but I used to constantly compare it or say like, it's my next Goodfellas or something.
Sure,
you know, like,
yeah. Well, there's an obvious Scorsese
absolutely
influence
right,
on
right.
that movie.
Right. But even in terms of how it made me feel and how I was reacting and how I was loving it, not just the fact that I loved it. There's a lot of movies I love, right? Like, I love...
Cry Macho.
Yeah, you want me to cry, don't you? Again.
A certain way.
in that macho way.
Yeah.
No, I love... I was thinking earlier about the movie Notting Hill that we have, like, a story with. And
yeah,
it's, like,
yeah, yeah.
part of our, like, movie love story, right?
Yes.
So I could say, like, I love that movie, but it doesn't make me feel on, like, a movie level the way that, like, Boogie Nights made me feel. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, you're reacting more to the memory and the story.
Yeah. Right.
Than you are to the... what the filmmaker is doing.
Like the elements of filmmaking coming together, the way that paint would come together on a canvas, you know,
right.
and someone
right.
would respond. It's like
right.
the way that these things came together
right.
is like having a...
And then it has the advantage also of like having 70s disco aesthetic.
Yes, yes.
Which you love.
Okay.
So it speaks to other
roller
things
girl.
That you love as well. Right, exactly. It's got roller skates in it. it's so funny because... we saw that movie before we knew each other, although it came out the year that we met, technically.
Did
we
it?
Just Yeah, we weren't. It came out in 97. We
oh,
met
yeah,
in 97,
yeah, yeah.
But we didn't really become friends until 98.
Yeah.
We saw it separately. Mm-hmm. I saw it alone. Mm-hmm. You saw it with a group of friends.
At Marquette in Milwaukee.
At Marquette in Milwaukee, uh-huh. where we saw Guns N' Roses. So everything is circular here. but I remember you saying that you came out of the movie and... couldn't really talk about it with any of the people that you were with.
Yes.
Because you were reacting to it in a way that was making you feel very alone.
Yes.
And I was alone.
Yes.
And then later we found each other and we bonded over our love of Boogie Nights.
Yes.
And now we're married.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And it's been 17 years.
And it's
well,
been 17
Well, it's been 20 years. Something since
right.
then, right?
Right.
But 17 years of marriage. Scenes from a marriage. End scene.
So... okay, so another name that I would put on this list.
Okay.
Because he has one of these movies.
Oh.
But not every one of his movies is one of these movies.
Okay.
Wes Anderson.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So, like, if I was trying to come up with a list of Erica's favorite directors, mm-hmm. I would probably put Wes Anderson on there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that you like the aesthetic and because Royal Tenenbaums is one of these movies
yes.
for you.
One of these movies, which we should at some point try to figure out like what
a name for.
Yeah. Like these movies, because again, and nothing I'm saying, and these aren't like unique, obscure filmmakers. I haven't gone back into like the
right.
rarities and like, oh, this movie from 65 or whatever. And that's great. I love that. I love that. All of that. But like, I'm, you know, when you're growing up and your local video store is basically just the Blockbuster and then you get to work there and it's awesome. But you know, it's, yeah, I like now in my adult years, I'm discovering even more. I mean, I watched old movies when I was growing up, and I'm very thankful to my mother for introducing me to them. And I'm lucky that I did have a lot of that background. But again, it was still to like a certain extent, right? Like when the way that films are even like being found or released now on disc where they were never available before, or things that, right? There's so much more now. And so I love all that, but I also am an adult with kids and a full-time job that is very demanding. And like, I wake up at 5 a.m. every day, and I'm usually at work for 10 hours and stuff like that. Like, right. So like, I don't have the time and or effort, or I do have effort, but I don't have the time really to truly go down those deep dives into like some director that is only being talked about in the past 10 years in mainstream audiences, always had its, you know, group or whatever. But I just don't have that. So when we talk about this, I think I may have mentioned this to you at some point, right? That like, I feel like my list would be very different if I had the time in my life to truly explore my favorite hobby. And it has always been the first thing since I was a kid. When you're asked in school, what do you like to do in your free time, or what are your hobbies, or what are your interests? Like, movies has always been on the top of that list. Mm-hmm. But still, despite that being like my favorite hobby, or if whatever you want to call it, right. It's not, I can't devote that much time to it, you know, like to go down those deep dives and be able to say like, here's a, because there's films that I've seen in the past 10 years that were, you know, maybe classics or whatever, and I just got to see them, right? That always happens with everybody.
Sure.
I'm thinking of, how about, what year was it?
I just this week saw Cry Macho.
When did we see Alien in the theater? Do you remember?
No, but it was within the last 20 years.
It was probably like 20 years ago.
Maybe.
Right?
Whenever they re-released it. Okay. 79. Maybe it was 2009.
Okay. Really?
Right?
No, we didn't have kids. When was Charlie born?
We didn't have kids?
No, we were like babies. It was probably, could have been
99? Like 2004?
Sure.
For like the 25-year anniversary?
Sure, maybe. Okay, and they did like midnight showings, and I had never seen it, and Patrick was super excited.
We saw it at like 4 p.m. on a Sunday.
We also went at midnight.
No.
Yes.
No.
What did we go to at midnight?
Not Alien.
Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Okay, well, Alien. So we saw Alien in the theater.
Yeah.
I had never seen it before.
Yeah.
And it immediately, like, I had that feeling of like, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen. I loved it so much. It was like an immediate response, and yay, I finally get to see it, right? But like, I guess I'm using that example because like I didn't get to like do a deep dive of all of
Ridley Scott's
films to determine whether or not like is he one of my favorite directors, right? And but if I looked at the list, I love a lot of his films.
Absolutely.
But it's just right. So it's I don't know. It's hard. But yes, Wes Anderson, Royal Tenenbaums is one of those movies. I don't know what we should call them, you know.
I don't know.
Exploding heart movies? No, that's kind of. I mean, I don't know. Goodfellas, does that count as an exploding heart movie? I mean, for me, but not on the same level. We used to talk about that more with like, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it is.
Well, I came up with that term to describe Streets of Fire.
Yes. Yes.
Like that was where that started.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the movie that gets you.
I was just going to say movies that know me.
Yeah. Which isn't to say that you haven't liked other Wes Anderson movies, and
right,
I think
no.
you overall like what Wes Anderson is doing, even if you don't love all of his movies.
Well, I feel like I've come back around in a way, too.
Well, he also made a better movie, like Darjeeling Limited. Grand Budapest Hotel was a better movie than his last few, to me, at least.
Right, to us, not to everybody.
Right.
But in the beginning, I definitely, he was on my list in that way because...
Yeah.
Because Rushmore 2 and Royal Tenenbaums, and then what was next?
After Tenenbaums was Life Aquatic.
Oh, okay. But yeah, Royal Tenenbaums was definitely enough to put him on that list.
Right.
But then, yeah. So what else? Who else would you put on my list?
So the other one that I was thinking of, we'll circle back around to like... Spielberg.
I was just going to say Spielberg.
Okay.
Had I said it when I thought it, we would have.
I was just about to say.
8 o'clock?
You are a legitimate phenomenon. Sofia Coppola.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But again, you don't love every Sofia Coppola movie.
No, but.
We saw that one, the most recent one on like Apple TV, On the Rocks.
Oh, yeah. I like things about it, but.
Yeah, it was fine.
But it was sort of On the Rocks. So.
Bling Ring, like.
Bling Ring, yeah.
Bling Ring's fine.
I liked watching it when we saw it in the theater.
Sure.
Yeah, but it's fine. Right. That's it. It didn't. It's certainly
it's
not.
It's not, not Lost in Translation.
Feeling some, right. It's not like.
It's not Virgin Suicides.
Right. Oh, my gosh. So you just named two that like, right, there you go.
Those are the movies that put her on the list for you, for me.
And I. For you, for me. I think that they. But that's the thing. Knowing what I know about her. No, I just. Those two films alone. Do it for me. They work.
Right.
That's it. Right. So,
right.
But here's the thing. There's probably a filmmaker out there who has made five movies. Like we just named two of hers that do it for me. No, there's someone who's
I
made.
There's not.
Really? Five that not on that level that I like a lot. Not on that level, but that
oh,
I like a lot.
Sure.
Right. Like Ridley Scott. Right. Like that,
yeah,
that
sure.
I like a lot.
Quentin Tarantino.
But not on that level. Yeah. Well, he still might be on that level.
Okay.
I think he still might be on that level because I really.
You...
Yeah.
Really like all of his movies,
right.
But he's not always speaking your language. He's not making movies just for you.
Right. Well, okay.
Right? I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood probably comes closest.
Yeah. Yeah. And that made me reflect a lot on his films, like
okay.
Where I was like, you know what? Why don't I talk about that? Because I'm going to be totally honest.
Yeah.
I think the reason why is because he became so popular that it just became like when we were young and he became so popular
yeah,
right,
yeah.
In Pulp Fiction, it just became like, well, of course Quentin Tarantino.
Right.
And I kind of just
right.
Like almost roll my eyes at myself. Like,
right.
I'm not going to say Quentin Tarantino,
right.
Of course. But no, he is on my list. I just don't include him for some – I don't know.
Well,
he is on my list.
He's also like getting enough coverage elsewhere.
Yeah,
like,
well, sure. But it, but I think
everybody's
it is,
talking about him.
In a
so.
Really stupid way, I think it is. Like, he's so popular, or he became so popular.
Sure.
That it was almost like I remember talking about how much I love Pulp Fiction, and then I was like, well, I can't keep talking about how much I love Pulp Fiction, because, like, everybody is. And
right.
It's just, but not that I don't have that
and
thing.
And some of the people are the worst people.
Well, I don't have that thing where I have a problem liking something popular. I do not care. I will love something popular.
Yeah,
let's
know.
Throw out, we'll get back to Spielberg. I have no problem
yeah, right,
loving
right.
Things that are popular
right.
And that are for the population, you know,
right.
The mass population.
Right.
I have no problem with that at all. But it still just felt like Quentin Tarantino fell into this different conversation. I don't know why, but that's dumb. That yeah, he's definitely on my list.
Yeah.
Top 10.
Yeah. Sure.
Now I'm yelling.
Spielberg.
I was crying, laughing. Now I'm yelling.
And Spielberg,
oh, we're talking
to me.
Back to Spielberg? Okay.
Is that thing that you're talking about, is that Tarantino thing where it's like he makes a ton of good movies,
mm-hmm.
But they're not movies that where you feel like he's talking directly to you.
Because I think Spielberg, and some people have not liked him for this, I think he's trying to speak to as many people as he can.
And he's very good at it.
Right.
He's probably the best at that.
Right, right. And I even think that you and I went through a period, or maybe it was just me, but where we were kind of like, I don't know, not including Spielberg when we talked about best directors, or just kind of like, you know, rolling our eyes a little at certain things, right?
Sure, probably.
And I feel like I came back around because I don't know if it's being older or if it's just, I don't know, continuing to study films and thinking about how it all fits in the big timeline. But like, Spielberg has made great movies. He has entertained the masses. I said something to you earlier about how like Scorsese and Spike Lee like understand something about me that I can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
Spielberg understands like what entertains everybody. And
right.
It's
right.
Even if it's not cool, it's still like pretty universal. Like so universal, which I think it is cool, but I know some people don't think it's cool. Do you know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's like universal feelings
yeah.
And hopes and fears and like nostalgia and the viewpoint of kids and like just, I don't know. He's speaking to everybody.
Well, so there's this weird phenomenon, and this probably should be the last thing we talk about.
Okay, but I thought of one director that we haven't talked about.
Oh, ooh.
Well, I could just say it quickly. Will you remember what you were going to say?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, it's about Spielberg.
Okay. We didn't talk about Rob Zombie.
Sure.
Who I've always sort of included on my list in a different way, I think, than the way that you like him. But for me, it's because, like I was saying, like, Scorsese and Lee understand something about me. Spielberg understands the masses. But, like, Rob Zombie's films understand what I am afraid of.
Yeah.
I love a horror movie. I love a lot of horror films, right? I love so many of them, but it's not like I really feel, and you don't have to feel super afraid to love a horror film. Like, there's always this conversation, right? Do you have to be scared?
Right. Scared by
You're never
movies.
Scared, but you won't go in a haunted house. I know we've talked about
those
this before.
Those scare me. I don't like those.
I know. It's so crazy. Because I'll go in a haunted house, but can't watch half the things that you can watch. But
yeah.
He understands what actually gives me fear. And yeah. even in a movie that is, you know, fiction and ridiculous, and you think, I still am like, I am there. I am with... I'm in House of a Thousand Corpses, and I am terrified that, like, that's going to be me when I'm on a road trip and we get lost in the South or what, like, rural area or something,
right,
and there's
right,
no
right.
cell phone service, and that's it. Some family is taking us. But like,
speaking of which, Sid Haig died 2 years ago today.
Oh, my gosh.
R.I.P. Sid Haig.
Hmm.
Yeah. Captain Spaulding.
So that means Three from Hell came out?
Like, yeah, right. Like
around that time, right?
Yeah. It was September, I think, okay. of 2019. Right?
Right. Because you were wondering, why didn't they wait till October for Three from Hell? And why didn't they switch the Kevin Smith movie to September? Right? Wasn't there like a thing with Kevin Smith and it was October?
Was that me wondering that or was that Adam?
Maybe that was Adam.
I think it was Adam.
Okay. It was Adam.
You're constantly confusing us.
Yeah.
Which is awkward when hands are being held.
You know what? Sorry, Adam. Sometimes I want to touch you too, like Slash.
So... what I was going to say about Spielberg
yes.
is I could think of a movie that is a one of these movies that get you, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a Boogie Nights. It's a Royal Tenenbaums.
Okay.
It's a Virgin Suicides.
Okay.
And it's Super 8.
Oh, yeah.
But I would never think to put J.J. Abrams on this list, even though he made one of these movies, because so much of what you're responding to in Super 8 is just... what Spielberg
he
does.
He made a Spielberg movie,
right.
yeah.
Right, he made
which
Spielberg
I
fan
love.
Fiction. I love it too, and I have no
like,
problem with it.
Right.
I'm not dismissing Super
right,
8
right.
by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it's interesting that making one of those movies is enough to get some filmmakers on the list,
mm-hmm.
but not J.J. Abrams. And I think it's because like his other movies don't come close.
Because
mm-hmm. what are we talking about? Mission Impossible 3, 2 Star Treks... and 2 Star Wars, basically.
I like them all. But
no.
yeah, there's not... I know where you're going with that.
No.
I like them all just
not
fine,
okay.
but yeah.
Not okay. there's 2 that I would object
I know,
to,
I
but
know
it's
exactly
fine.
What you're thinking of.
It's fine. Because I think even when you don't love a Wes Anderson movie, it's still distinctly a Wes Anderson movie, and there's something about the stylization... and the authorial voice, and same with Sofia Coppola, that
mm-hmm.
like that you are responding to,
mm-hmm.
even if it's not as good. You know, like mm-hmm. Marie Antoinette isn't as good as Virgin Suicides, but there's still enough of Sofia Coppola there that you're like,
yes.
yeah, okay,
yes. right.
This is speaking to me in some way.
Right.
Whereas I don't think J.J. Abrams' other movies are speaking to you in that way.
Right.
I don't know, which is why I wouldn't put him on the list for you, for me.
For you, for me. you just made me think of so many things, though. Then I was thinking about like Steve James and how I've loved so many of his documentaries.
Yeah.
He's someone I think many, many years ago, I had some sort of like favorite director thing on Twitter that I did. And it's like I included him because of like.
Those count, by the way. So
okay.
those are canon.
Okay.
So whoever you put on there.
Locked in.
Is locked in.
Permanent.
So we just needed to find that tweet and we could have
okay.
avoided this last just, half hour.
Okay. Twitter search.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
I
like,
don't know, you know, to be honest.
sometimes people like. Find old tweets.
Right?
Like, how did you do that?
Right.
But I don't know. I know there's ways.
I don't know
ways.
What they are.
Okay.
So
Steve
once
James.
Once something is more than a week old, I'm
Erica
like,
Bromley.
I don't know. It's gone.
I know.
I'm not scrolling back.
No, but I love Steve James. Ava DuVernay is someone who I always look forward to what she's doing because I really thought she did such amazing work with Selma and I loved her documentary. And
13th?
Yep. And so I'm always thinking about her. We didn't talk about David Fincher. Is David Fincher on my list?
I mean, I would say no,
right,
even though
no.
you love Social Network.
Right. The answer is no, but like, my God, I love Social Network.
Yeah. And I mean, he's like Ridley
yeah,
Scott. Like
right.
he's got
yes.
a lot of good
yes.
movies.
That's, yep.
And he's got, you know, Benjamin Button, and he's got Mank, and he's got Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Like, These are the not good David Fincher movies for me.
Okay, think about John Carpenter, though.
Yeah.
John Carpenter is a director I've never said is my favorite director, right? But, like, how many of his films... And see, I was late. Like, I was late to the thing, right? I just saw that for the first time a couple years ago. But that was another
one.
Immediately. Right. Yeah, that's right. Because it was like a 24-hour music box marathon or all whatever. And like, that was super fun. Those are always super fun when we go to them.
But it was very late. And
I will always fall asleep at the, like, 2 a.m. time slot, no matter what.
Are you excited for our marathon?
Yeah.
Me too.
Okay.
I haven't picked all the movies yet.
Why not? Are you going to include something from one of my favorite directors?
Like David Fincher?
It's a horror, babe. Horror.
Oh, Rob Zombie?
Horror.
Am I going to include a Rob Zombie? I don't know. Probably not.
No, but there's so much. Then we could go back. We could go to classic horror. We could talk about. There's so many. There's so many decades.
There's so many eras. Eras.
There we go. But yeah, so I mean, John Carpenter, but it's not just the thing. Like, there are a lot of his films that I really, really like, but I think it's because I discovered a lot of his work in later years when I tell you my favorite directors, almost all those names you talked about earlier are people I discovered when I was young or youngish.
Okay.
Does that make a difference?
Maybe.
And again, it ties back to me saying, like, I just feel like maybe as much as I do have a lot of time for my hobby, more than some people do, I don't have the time to do much beyond watch the movies. Like, I can't go back. I can't go down. Like sometimes you'll, like, watch everything from one director because, like, you're working from home for 3 days and you can have stuff on the background or whatever. And, like, I just don't have that. So, like, I don't get to do those deep dives to, like, maybe teach me or remind me, right? So a lot of what I'm going with started with childhood. Like,
sure.
Those experiences and responses. Do you know what?
What?
I didn't get to ask you about this being our 599th podcast.
That's okay.
Episode.
We should wrap it up. We have kids to put to bed.
Kids.
And a podcast to put out tomorrow. But this was really, really fun. Thank you for doing this with me and making this our 599th episode.
Laughing and crying. And
it ran the gamut of emotions.
Talking about Slash.
It really encapsulated 599 episodes. Right. I feel like there were some laughs, some tears.
I appreciate that you accept me.
I more than accept you. I downright love you.
Oh, babe.
Thank you guys very much for listening. One more show until Scary Movie Month. Very exciting.
Yay. I know. So exciting.
Yeah. Tomorrow night, as of this recording, so tonight, I guess if you're listening to this the day it comes out, we're recording our annual Scary Movie Month commentary. I'm not going to announce what it is, but you've got that to look forward to.
Is that the 600th episode?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
No. That will be like 601.
Okay.
We've got plans for 600. Don't worry. Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening, and we will talk to you next week for episode 600. Bye, babe.
Bye. Bye, Slash.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.